Hash Hash and Circle Up.
Welcome to On, the Hash House Harrier podcast for interviews, history, and stories. I'm your host, Ra.
Welcome to part two, the final episode with Headgear down in George, South Africa, GM of no less than six hashes across his several decades. Enjoy.
Did you pick up hashing ever again, or is that it? That was
the end. That was the end for me. I mean, in the meantime, I've hashed in other countries. When I've hashed in New York City, and I've hashed in even hashed in South Africa, where I live now. But there's no hash near us.
Which town are you in?
A place called George in the Western Cape. It's on the Garden Route. There's no hash here. I know there's a hash in Cape Town. I've hashed on it, and I've hashed in the Durban hash. Listen, I'm 81 years old now. I'm over that.
Yeah, good for you.
Very fond memories.
Yeah, you put a lot of time in as GM in all these different places. When you finished and said, okay, I'm done, but you had seen hashing, and you'd seen it through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, a bit of the zeros. What do you think's happening in the future of hashing? I mean, you haven't looked at it for a while, but what do you think is the long term? Had it changed over that couple decades you were in it?
Yeah, I think it's definitely changed. It's got more family orientated now, and that's not a bad thing. I mean, let's face it. I mean, as long as people take hashing for what it is, and they don't mind a bit of bad language when it happens, and a few rude songs when they happen. I mean, that's what it's all about. Yeah, it will continue to evolve. I'm sure it'll be around for a lot longer yet. I still know hashers of my age that. The hash, and they go walking with the hash and all that. But if there was a hash here, I'd have probably joined it and walk. But there isn't, so that's done for me. You know, that's it.
With your wife Lise not being such a keen hasher, did you hash when you traveled? Did you ever go to any other hash events, or did you just bump into the hash occasionally when you were traveling?
I didn't do a great deal of traveling. I mean, I've hashed on the New York hash two or three times when we've been there. And I've hashed on Bath and Bristol in the UK when I've been there. I did do the London hash once years ago. Mm-hmm. But that's all. That's all, basically.
But even with that, you've got North America, Asia, Africa, Europe. You've hashed on at least four continents.
Yeah, I forgot, I did do the Sydney hash once as well. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, okay, so that's a pretty good world coverage. I took over a directory website where we used to have a printed directory of who was the contacts on the hashes. Did you ever see that?
I think I did, yes.
Yeah, you probably were listed in there. I have some old copies. You may have been listed as a contact for some of the clubs when it was printed.
Yeah, maybe.
We went to the web, the internet, to keep track of contact information. And I created a little thing of where have you hashed. So there's now kind of a sub club of people who are trying to get as many checkboxes and hash in as many countries as they can, kind of as their own little sport. Were there people on your hashes with as culture diversified that didn't drink or didn't want to participate in the circles, or were they pretty all in together?
All the people I knew on the hash were total pissheads. They
How did you get your hash name?
Oh, it's pretty obvious, really. I mean, it's very simple. My name's Jim Hatt. Headgear, I mean, it's pretty obvious. I've always thought it was a pretty boring name, actually, to be honest with you. But there you are. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. Did it come up in Lagos? Is that where it came?
Probably, yes. I think so, yeah.
I know when I was in Cairo, they weren't using hash names very much, and I really made a push for it and started naming people. Were you in places where you were giving out hash names at any of these?
Probably you were more proactive in that than I was. You know, I don't think I promoted hash names that much. Maybe I should have done, but I didn't.
It's become pretty central in USA hashing. I think
it seems like
the USA clubs have really made a big deal about it, made them as raunchy as they can. And that's made a big push.
Now you mentioned USA. I remember I've run in the Dallas hash a couple of times. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's just step away from hashing part of this just for a little bit. What did you do that took you to these postings apart from following lease? What were you doing when you weren't hashing in all these places?
Well, when I worked, I was in construction. I used to prepare bids for construction work for companies. That's it. Yeah. And now I see my wife back here again, checking up on me, making sure I don't tell any lies.
Certainly was a factor when I was in Cairo still. Drinking and driving laws didn't exist. So we didn't have to worry. I mean, we had to not drink till we crashed, but there really weren't checkpoints and any of that. Did that ever become an issue in any of the places you were?
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, as an expatriate in third world countries, most expatriates have never probably worried about drinking and driving because there's very little sort of control over it. And most of the time, fortunately, we can manage to drink enough and drive fairly safely. I do remember, well, it was the last night I was of the Hash in Cairo, actually. They'd had a big party for me somewhere in Zamalek. It was in Zamalek. It was in Zamalek, love. Go away. We were in Zamalek. I was always so particular that I had enough ice to make the beer cold. And on this particular night in Zamalek, my last night, they forced me to drink a pint of warm beer. And not just warm, it was actually been in a saucepan on a stove. And it was totally bloody revolting. Anyway, on top of all that, I'd had many, many more drinks. And by the time I got to leave, I was more than drunk. And I really should not have driven a car. My wife, who doesn't drive, I must say, she doesn't have a driving license.
And she never criticizes your driving.
Well, she does occasionally. But I got to the car and I could barely get the bloody keys in the lock. I got in the car and she said, no, you can't drive. And I said, no, I've got to drive. She got in the car. It was during Ramadan. As you know, Ramadan is when they all party till bloody 3 or 4 o'clock in the bloody morning.
Yeah.
And we were in one side of Zamalek. We got to get to the other side. It wasn't a long journey. It was probably maximum 1 mile. I got in the car and I could barely see, to be honest with you. I agreed with my wife that she would steer and I would change gear and control the speed. And that's the way we got home. She leaned over and steered the car and I changed gear and somehow we got home. We didn't hit anything. There were donkey races going on in the street and Christ knows what, but we got home. But on top of that, when we got there, I parked in the wrong place and some Egyptian guy said, you are parking in my place. And I thought, oh, God.
And you were.
And he was quite right. So we had to move and we managed to get it out and park in the right place, and by which time my wife said, I've had enough, and she went upstairs to her flat. And I insisted on getting my stuff out of the trunk and taking it in, and eventually I got the key in the lock and opened the trunk and managed to get my bag of gear and whatever it was and upstairs, and I think she found me in the corridor about 2 meters from the bedroom in the morning.
But that was your last hash in Cairo.
That was it, yeah.
Back on memory day, that beer was Stella then? The brand of the beer that was Stella beer?
Stella, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I also remember the wine. It was Omar Khayyam, which was... It was apparently okay until the wine traders had a sit-in. But fortunately, I was there for 2 years before I met Lise, and up to then I was forced to drink Omar Khayyam, but after that, with the diplomatic stuff, I could drink real wine.
Yeah, brought in on the Canadian embassy. I lived in Zamalek for my first 3 or 4 years there. I lived about a block from the Marriott on that side by the Esso station.
We lived in just close to Sunny Supermarket. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
We lived very close to that. And do you remember Pub 28?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's strange. Yeah, unfortunately now there's Starbucks and everything else. There weren't so many. I think any place you remember I'll have heard of because there weren't many choices. And all the expats were still going and finding these places. That's great. But I do remember that, yeah, your name was on the hash trashes and on the T-shirts that were still remnant there at the late 1980s. What happened in Cairo is we ended up keeping that big crowd, maybe getting even a little bigger to 150, 160 in the mid-90s when there was even more expats coming to Cairo, when every single country's development agency was in there pouring in money. So we had an endless supply of expats and their kids. There was a very good, there was another good posting. I have a big collection of t-shirts. I was there at Cairo. We ended up giving out a new t-shirt every year with the membership. Often they had too much sponsorship on them, so they weren't great t-shirts. They had a lot of logos. Did you collect t-shirts all the way back from Lagos days?
I have many still, yes. But tell me, in Cairo, do they still have the wanker t-shirt?
They ran out. I have both brown and gray. I kept a couple souvenirs. I'll pull it out at some point and take a picture of it. It was a picture of an anchor with a W and an apostrophe, wanker of the week. Yes.
Wanker of the week, yes. I've got some of those.
Oh, that's great. You do know there is a hash t-shirt museum now. It has two branches. There probably are going to be more. There's one in Kuala Lumpur. They're both run by a Dutch guy. So there's one in The Hague. So at some point, if you're going to ever ditch your souvenir t-shirts, we'll put you in touch with this guy if we have any special events. Do you remember the wanker shirt? They were brown. We ended up going to a gray. We went to a gray one for a while, too.
I got a brown one. I didn't have a gray one.
That's great. Hashing at the pyramids, that's one of the things that I don't know if you could hash at the Taj Mahal. I don't think you can really hash at the Acropolis. You need a ticket to get in. So that makes the pyramids in those decades of the 80s and the 90s kind of special, that you could get to a wonder of the world. You could just drive right up to it and pop your beer after the run.
Absolutely. And to have a barbecue in the foot of the pyramids was absolutely magic. You know, in the middle of the night, it was just magic. Magic.
Of course, now there are fences, cameras, electronic surveillance, and electronic wires and everything stopping that. So there will never be again, I think, a hash run. The biggest event we had was after the Interhash in Cyprus. We brought a bunch of people, came on a boat. We had about 400 people run around the pyramid. So even as late as 1996 and our 1,000th run, which I think was about late 1990s, we were still able to get into the pyramids. We could sneak around the back then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that's great. That's great going back through those memories. So I'm very familiar with your name. So this is the first time we've ever talked. I don't know if we've ever hashed together in Africa. I don't think so. We didn't go to the same Africa hash. I've known your name since pretty much the day I landed in Cairo, because you left as a GM right before I got there. So you were pretty famous. And the people that were there with me as I started all knew you and certainly remembered the days. And I got to know Claude. Claude wasn't around for very long into 1990. I don't remember when he died, but he left in early 1990. Yeah, everybody who met him, he's on the list of one of the most entertaining or crazy or curious people almost anybody's met.
Total nutter.
Yeah, that's great. Are you in touch? Do you have any acquaintances that were from all those years of hashing that you're still in touch with?
I'm still in touch with one guy. My brain is gone.
From which hash was he?
He would be from Lusaka and the Accra hash.
Ah.
What was his name, for God's sake? Do you know, it's a bastard when your bloody memory goes, isn't it? At the moment, I can't remember who he is.
Do you think he has anything to do with hashing these days?
Oh, yes, he still hashes. He's told me in his last letter.
Well, maybe someone he knows will be aware of these podcasts and he'll see your podcast.
When I remember his name, I will tell him that, you know, about it. And is there a login detail you have for this or what?
There's a website called ononpodcast.com and they're just out there. Nobody but hashers are going to find them. But I wanted to ask you also about other hashing in Egypt, if it had started. When I was there, the Delta Hash, based in Alexandria, Egypt, had started. It was a much smaller group. Is that anything you remember?
I do vaguely remember that. I think we got together once somewhere. I do vaguely remember it, but only vaguely.
In later years, we started having a Nash Hash. We started having at least twice a year, once somewhere in the Delta and once in Cairo, and the two hashes would join together. Yeah, it was a great place. Did you do desert travel while you were there?
I drove across the desert to Fayoum or somewhere a couple of times.
With this podcast, I've ended up finding people who started as early as 1962, people who started the hash in Jakarta, people that started hashes in basically every continent. So you're somebody who's been a GM at more different clubs than most people. So let's just get the whole list here. You were GM in Lagos Thursday, then Cairo. You were GM in Accra, Islamabad, Dar es Salaam, Zambia. So we've got at least six.
Six
different places you were GM. Well, that's good. Thanks for all the stuff you've done to keep hashing fun and alive.
I just wish I could. I just wish I was running George, but I don't feel inclined to start one, to be honest with you.
We'll mention in the notes that you live there. So if any hashers go on a wine country tour in South Africa, maybe they can stop by and walk around your house and have a down with you.
Yeah, well, whatever. Yeah, no.
Well, thanks for persevering. And finally, we got in touch and we're able to get this history down. It's really a pleasure for me to meet you. Let me get one question. And when you're in the circle at the hash, is the GM always right?
Yes.
And what were you like? What was headgear like in a circle when you weren't GM? Did you behave, or were you a wisecracker? I mean, as a GM, you have to be ready to go.
I had a wisecrack when necessary, but generally I behaved when I wasn't GM. When I was GM, yes, I was always right. And that was it.
Yeah. Perfect. Great.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for chasing me.
Okay. All right. On.
Thanks, on too. Cheers.
That's a wrap with Headgear down in George, South Africa. Get down there and help him start a new hashing club. This is the On Podcast. Hasher voices, hasher stories, hasher history. New episodes every week. Till next time, On. This is Ra. To close the circle, here's the hash anthem sung by Mother Hash.
Swing low, sweet child. Coming for to carry me home. Swing low, sweet.